my hand over. Start. Fuck it.
Hello.
Wait. How does that go? At least you got the fuck ups out of the way early. Oh, fuck. I stepped on the dog's bowl.
From the burning mesas of the Arizona desert to the slot machine-clad boardwalks of New Jersey, it's the Imaginarium with Scott and Todd. I'm Scott Colbert.
And I'm the horror nerd, Todd Staruch.
And this is our first episode. Jesus, it's going to be one of those shows,
oh,
Todd.
Boy,
I'm
yeah,
telling you right now.
Years off to a good start.
I'm just letting you know. It is the first recording of 2024.
Yes, it is.
You know, and I see that number, 2024, and I'm thinking, how the fuck did we get here? It seems like such a futuristic year number, 2024.
Dude. It boggles my mind that the 80s was 40 years ago.
Right?
I can't deal with it because you're right. Back then, I couldn't even have conceived of the year 2024. That was so far away, you know?
Yeah, exactly. You know, and we still don't have any flying cars yet. Although I saw an article not that long ago that they're working on something like that.
Yeah, great. So we'll have idiots in the air and on the roads.
Yeah. Raining parts down upon innocent bystanders when they crash into somebody because they can't keep off their fucking phone.
Exactly.
So, yeah, so, that'll be fun.
So, speaking of the new year, I swear my humor is not appreciated in my time. I don't think anybody got my joke on New Year's Day when I posted today is 010124 and this is the last time this will happen in our lifetime. Like, nobody got it. And people just fascinate me. I had this come across my timeline at least 50 times. You know, today's date or the last day of the year will be 123123, you know, 12/31/23, and this will never happen again in our lifetimes. I'm like, you realize every fucking date will never happen again in your lifetime?
Well,
I just find it fascinating that people are obsessed with numbers like that. Like, it means anything that the date is 123123.
Yeah, it's really weird. There's you know, there's like I'm not sure what I would call it. Some kind of mysticism surrounding numbers for some reason. And when you look at it, numbers are really the original science.
Well, yeah. And look, dude, I do understand it. I mean, some of the mysticism goes back centuries, you know, and why is 13 unlucky? Why is 7 a lucky number here, but not in other countries? Like, I understand that, but some of them are just weird, like when, you know, and I found that one to be like a little bit odd. Like, yeah, every date is unique, you know, not just that one. And not only that, we are the only, like, I think we're the only country or one of the very few countries that goes month, day, year. Like,
yeah.
In Europe, it was 31/12/23, which means precisely dick, you know?
Yeah.
So, and I'm like, yeah, only in America, folks, do we, you know, only in America do we think we're so special, I guess.
Yeah. Although I, you know, I understand kind of the appeal of mysticism for numbers. The last time I went to Walmart to get groceries, it came out to 69.69.
Nice.
And I giggled.
Yeah, no, that I get, but that's because you have the maturity level of a 13-year-old. You know, that's...
I should be so lucky.
Right, I mean, I understand that. Or... But here's the thing, and I don't want to spend a ton of time on this. It was just something I thought was funny, and people are like, Tug, you get so upset. I'm like, no, I'm not upset. I just find it curious is all, you know? But certain things, like the number 13, there's like a long history about it, you know, and why is it considered unlucky? The fact that a quirk of numbers means the date is 123123 doesn't mean anything. You know what I mean? There's like, you know, and I asked a few people like, okay, so what? Like, is there something special that's supposed to happen? Or is there some mysticism? And then that blew their minds. There's no, man. It just, yeah, it just comes out. Like, all right, then. But whatever, dude. I was more upset that nobody got my fucking joke.
Well, you know, that's the worst part. You know, you post something that you... But you think, oh, this is so fucking clever.
Yeah, I know, right?
And nobody gets it. Nobody likes it. You know, and it's nobody comments on it. You're like, you ungrateful motherfuckers.
I know. I bestow my cleverness upon you.
Yeah.
You don't even appreciate it.
Yeah. It's
sons of bitches. Bumpuses.
Oh,
yeah, but just a funny thing, that's all. But here we are, as we record, we're 4 days into the new year, and I'm not rich yet, so.
Yeah, well, neither am I. But I guess I should probably play the lottery if I want that to happen.
Yeah, I guess, you know, and then, of course, you know, I was off all last week, and you know how that goes. I sometimes question the wisdom of even taking time off from work, because all that means is you come back to a giant pile of shit that accumulated in your absence.
Yeah.
So I've just been playing catch up like all week, like all this stuff that, you know, people were like, yeah, oh yeah, I got you while you're out. I'll take care of it. And they didn't take care of it.
Well, of course not. Why would they?
Yeah. But it's all good. We're supposed to have a quote-unquote significant snowstorm this weekend here in the Northeast, so we'll see what happens. I don't mind some snow. We had a very rainy November and December here with a lot of flooding and stuff, so I'm ready for some snow. I just wish it wasn't on the weekend, which is the time where I generally do like my personal stuff, you know. I work from home, so if it snows during the week, fuck if I care. You know, I look out the window, I'm like, oh, pretty. You know, like. So.
Yeah, that's the nice thing about working from home, because you don't have to battle the icy freeways and highways and byways.
Yeah. I mean, dude, so my first real IT job, I was a morning IT operator, so I had to be at work at 5 o'clock in the morning. And there wasn't even an internet back then. So I had to physically go to the office. So imagine me driving up the New Jersey Turnpike at 4 a.m. in a raging snowstorm, you know?
Right, right.
I mean, that 10 miles an hour, you know, hoping, you know, please don't die, please don't die, please don't die, you know? So boy, how times have changed.
Yeah, and that's one of the few good things about having to take public transportation, or, you know, Uber occasionally, is I don't have to worry about driving, but I do have to worry about the driver.
Well, yes.
So.
There was one time when I was working in Manhattan, I used to take the bus every day into the Port Authority. And there was one time, you know, it was snowing. I get on the bus to go home, and we all, like, I'm not a religious guy, but I was saying prayers with the old Spanish lady next to me. I thought for sure we were going to die. Like, this driver did not seem to notice that there was snow falling. I was just like, well, and so this is how it ends. On a New Jersey Transit bus coming out of the Lincoln Tunnel.
Oh, dear.
Oh, boy.
All right, so we're going to start off the new year by talking about our favorite movies from 2023. Yes, and as we say every time we do one of these, you know, favorite lists, these are our favorites. You and I both kind of agree that calling something the best is really too subjective. It would take a work of art like the Mona Lisa, you know, or a Rembrandt painting to call it the best. And even then, there's still slight subjectiveness to that.
Sure.
So, you know, I always like that we talk about our favorites, because these may not be the best made or, you know, or best attended movies or whatever the case might be, but they happen to be our favorites. You know, they connect to us in some way. And we've enjoyed them far more than other movies that we've seen this year. So
100%, man. And some of the movies across my lifetime that are my favorites will certainly never, ever show up on any best of list, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's like we talked about last week, Plan 9 from Outer Space, and how, you know, geeks and nerds, you know, always talk about how much they love that movie and how great it is. Well, you know, it's not a great movie. I'm not even sure I would call it an enjoyable movie. It's the kind of movie that really, I think, to enjoy it, you have to be with other people so you can all make fun of it. But to just sit there and watch Plan 9 from Outer Space and say, oh, that was a great movie. Yeah, you ate some bad mushrooms. That's what happened. So,
yeah. And although I was, so just for fun, like I did look up like a couple of like best of lists, you know, just to see what like was out there, like what people were saying, what critics were saying. And a couple of my favorites did show up on some best of lists, but most of them were like obscure, like some obscure films that I didn't even know about, you know? So, you know, that's why I like that we talk about our favorites versus like the best, because I didn't watch a ton of art house films this last year. I'll be honest with you.
No, I didn't watch a ton of films, period. This was kind of a somewhat weak year for movies compared to 2022 or 2021. There were fewer choices for me, and that absolutely may have had to do with I saw a few movies this year than I have in previous years, just because I've been working, been busy, and haven't had the chance to either stream it or watch it, you know, go to a theater. So my list is kind of a little bit all over there. But I'm going to start off with one that I pretty much guarantee nobody has seen. And it's not necessarily what I would call an art house movie, not by any stretch of the imagination. But it is a low-budget indie movie starring our favorite Nightmare on Elm Street actor, Mark Patton. And it's a movie called Swallowed.
Oh, yes. I knew which one you were talking about as soon as you said Mark Patton. But I haven't seen it, so.
It's a fun movie. I seem to say this more and more, but I don't want to spoil it for people, and I hate saying that because you know how we feel about spoilers. But this is just one of those movies that it really needs to be seen with not knowing a whole lot about it. It's primarily a crime thriller with some horror elements and a dash of sci-fi thrown into it. But Mark Patton plays the bad guy in it, and he really does a good bad guy. And it's very, it's a, I guess I would probably call it a gay, or excuse me, an LGBTQIA plus movie. Because most of the characters are gay. I mean, it starts off with the main characters being driven to Hollywood by a friend of his so he can have a career in porn movies, in, you know, in gay porn movies. So that's where it starts off, and it just takes a wild road from there. And, you know, knowing that and knowing the word, the name of the movie is called Swallowed, it pretty much is about what you would expect it might be.
Awesome. I definitely need to watch that. And you know what? I almost did the other night because it, I forget where it's streaming, but I was clicking through to see what I wanted to watch. And I can't even tell you like why I've skipped over it, but I definitely want to check that out. Cause not only have I met Mark several times, but you mentioned it. And then of course I added it to the list of movies Scott told me I should watch, but that I probably won't.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm almost positive we talked about this.
We did.
When I saw it.
We did. Yeah, that's for sure.
All right. So that's fine. Yeah.
All right. So I'm going to start with one that is a little bit offbeat, but it was definitely more. It was a quirky movie, but it was a major release. And we talked about it because it did get a lot of press. But, man, I had so much fun watching this one at the movies. And that's Cocaine Bear.
Okay, yeah.
I really dug this movie. First, I was intrigued because I couldn't believe that Universal Pictures, a major studio, gave Elizabeth Banks, a major star, millions of dollars to make a movie called Cocaine Bear. Because it's not like Hollywood studios to take a risk like that, you know, but it paid off because it made money at the box office. Why? Because people were thirsty for something new that wasn't a superhero movie or yet another sequel. That was just something different. And the movie was way better than it had any right to be.
Right.
You know, the characters are funny. And some people complained that there wasn't enough Cocaine Bear in it, but I think that because it focused on how the humans deal with the situation made it better. It's just like the shark in Jaws, you know?
Yeah.
If it was all just a bear doing goofy shit because it's high on cocaine, that would probably get tiresome pretty quick.
Yeah.
But I thought the two kids were hilarious. Like, you ever done cocaine? Sure. You know, it's like an 8-year-old. Like, well, yeah. You know? And then, well, how much do we take? And he's got like this giant spoonful. And I'm like, son, you're going to die. You know? I thought it was hilarious. And, you know, but then what's her name? Perry Russell was good, you know? And, I just thought it was hilarious. And again, it was just a good time at the movies, you know, which sometimes it's all I want. You know, I knew what I was getting into and it really did pay off. You know, Elizabeth Banks did a great job. They're talking about a sequel and I'm like, oh no, 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 no. You'll fuck it up. Please. I do not want a sequel. Let it just be, you know, but man, I had a lot of fun with Cocaine Bear.
Yeah, I did too. And it had a good cast. I think that was Ray Liotta's last role or his
it
next
was
to last role.
Yeah, something like that. I mean, which, look, at the end of the day, he took the movie, right? They said, here, we're going to pay you. And he was like, all right. But I wonder like how his family feels that was his swan song, you know? but it was pretty, like, the critics had a lot of good stuff to say about it. So it's not like his last film was just a complete clunker, you know?
Yeah, no, I mean, it was. It was fairly well received.
Yeah.
You know, given the type of movie it was, that surprised me. And one of the kids, uh, the the boy in it, Christian Convery, he is really good, and he stars in that Netflix series, Sugar Tooth or Sweet Tooth.
Hmm.
And he does. He's one of the best child actors I've seen in a long, long time. And Jesse Tyler Ferguson was in it from, you know, Modern Family, so it had some names to it.
Absolutely.
And I think everybody who was in it was in on the joke, you know, and understood what they were making. And it looks like they all just had a shit ton of fun making that movie.
I agree. There were at one of the previous horror conventions I went to, a few of the people from Cocaine Bear were supposed to be there. But it was still like the strike was still going on, and they got a little bit nervous about doing a con during the strike, so they bailed out. And I was disappointed because, man, I wanted to interview them so bad about that movie.
Oh, no kidding. I would have too.
It was the one guy. So it was the girl that played the nurse, you know, the Asian girl that played the nurse, the blonde kid that played like the drug gang leader.
Right.
And then I forget who. There was a third one. I forget who. Maybe the guy that played the cop. You know, he's kind of well-known character actor, the black guy that played the
Yeah, I know who you mean. He was
up on the roof of the gazebo and stuff. So, yeah. So, yeah, hopefully they do the convention circuit this year because, God, I would love to talk to them about that movie.
Yeah, no kidding. O'Shea Jackson.
Yes, yes, yes. I couldn't think of his name. Thank you.
Yeah. So. Well, I had to look it up for the kid's name because I couldn't remember it. I knew his first name was Christian, but I couldn't remember his last name. So, yeah, definitely a movie to check out. It's streaming somewhere, I'm sure of it. So,
absolutely. So, all right, what do you got next?
My next one is a movie you talked about first, and then I had to watch it, and I absolutely enjoyed this movie, and it's No One Will Save You.
Mm.
Is that
remember when we said we probably will have a duplicate on our list? Well, there you go.
And what I liked about this movie is one of the things that people dinged it for, which is there's absolutely no well, that's not true. There is dialogue. There's maybe a few sentences in the entire movie, and that's it. Because it's just all about, you know, one woman's journey, for lack of a better word. And we talked about this when you had seen it. You know, you don't talk to yourself, you know, when you're alone. Well, unless you're me. But, you know, you don't spout exposition about things that are going on when you're doing it. And when you just have that one character, it would seem absolutely ridiculous for them to do it. So it's absolutely logical for there to be almost no dialogue in the movie. And I think that only strengthens it. And I absolutely love that because that's, you know, that's taking a big chance. You know, and this is the second movie we've talked about coming out of Hollywood that were kind of big risks. And for a movie where people actually have to pay attention because there is no dialogue and they have to watch it to see what's going on, you know, that's not necessarily something Hollywood likes to do.
True. True. I like that movie a lot. I like the fact that like the aliens were really malevolent, you know?
Yeah.
And like you said, the movie got dinged for the lack of dialogue, but I don't know how else they could have made a movie where 95% of the focus is on one person.
Yeah.
You know, and she has to use her facial expressions and everything to convey the message. Like if she had just been belching out exposition to the camera, it would have been stupid, you know, like, oh, what? The aliens, I think the aliens in the house, like who would do that? You know?
Exactly.
So
You know, and that was Caitlin Dever who started that. My list.
Okay. So I did not. We normally we try to. This was hard to like narrow it down to like five, but so my next one is a sort of a little more obscure horror film that I liked a lot. And it's a Mexican / Peruvian movie called Husera, the Bone Woman. Technically, it was made in 2022, but it didn't get released here until 2023. So I'm including it. It's sort of a body horror movie, and it's a woman who has dreamed of getting pregnant, and she finally does, but she gets cursed by an evil spirit. And it's like the road she goes down to try to break the curse. And I just find it super creepy and very effective use of sound and jump scares. You know, we've talked about this before. A lot of horror fans bitch about jump scares, but they are just another tool in the filmmaker's tool bag, you know, and if you use them right, they are really good. It won an award for Best New Director. Michelle Garza Cervera, it's her first film she directed. And I think it's awesome. It's creepy, it's scary. It's got like, it's called The Bone Woman because it's got some of that like bone crunching body horror stuff, you know? It's really good. So Husera, I don't know if that's how you pronounce it correctly, but The Bone Woman is my next one. Everyone should check it out.
I haven't even heard of that one. That's not something that you even talked about on the show.
I can't remember if we did. If you say we didn't, I believe you. I thought we might have, you know. Because I watched it, and then the night before we recorded, but fuck, that would have been a long time ago. So the fact that I don't remember is not shocking.
Yeah, no, I understand that. But I will definitely have to check that out. All right, so my next one is... It's Renfield.
Mm.
And... That came out, it was February of last year it came out, and I remember when I watched that, I was just so surprised by how good that movie was. And I was just, you know, it's Nicolas Cage Unchained is Dracula, and Renfield basically having enough of Dracula's shit and wanting to get out from under the curse of Dracula. And it's just a lot of fun. It's horror, but it's more comedy than horror. You know, there's a lot of gratuitous violence and gore in it, which makes sense. And it's a lot of fun. It's beautifully shot. The color schemes that they use, it's almost comic book in nature. And it's just extremely well done. And it is funny as hell. It's probably the funniest movie I saw last year. That wasn't something I had already seen.
Mm.
So, and it did very well at the box office. I don't know if there's going to be a sequel to it or not. I'm kind of like you with this, as you are with Cocaine Bear. I almost don't want to see a sequel because it probably could not live up to, you know, the original Renfield. But I also want to see, you know, where these characters, what happened after the end of the movie. So, yeah, I'm not necessarily sure I want a sequel, but I would still go see it because I'm curious to see what would happen to them.
Me too. I think we talked about Renfield. The only downside, the only thing I didn't like about it is Awkwafina.
Yeah.
Look, I don't know her. I'm sure she's a lovely person. I just don't understand how she has a career in Hollywood. I just don't. You know, I think she was in some big TV show. I don't know. I can't remember. Was it like Fresh Off the Boat or something like that? I don't know.
Yeah, something like that.
But I find her great. Like she great, her voice, like everything about her just grates upon my nerves. But other than that, I loved it. I thought Nick Cage was awesome as Dracula. Cause it was just like, Nick, just do you, you know, but as Dracula. Yeah. And yeah, I thought the concept was cool. Like it explained like why does Renfield eat the bugs, you know? So I'm with you, man. Although that one was not specifically on my list. So we did not duplicate it.
Oh, well, good for that. All right. What's your next one?
So next up is a bigger release, you know, big budget release that I thought was a really good movie, and it just didn't perform as well at the box office as they had hoped. But it's Dungeons and Dragons: Honor Among Thieves.
Yeah, I knew that was going to be on your list.
I love this movie. I have watched it at least 5 or 6 times on streaming. I had it on in the background the other day when I was putting my Christmas decorations away. I just find it a fun, entertaining movie that does justice to the source material. You know, there's a lot like the monsters, like the lore and everything. Sorry, my kind of like a little glitch in my audio. You know, and then like there's a scene where you see like the group, there's a group of adventurers, and then like you suddenly realize that they are the characters from the animated Dungeons and Dragons show. So all that little fan service stuff. And I just thought all the characters were charming and endearing. I just dug it. But the problem is, I don't think it made enough money to get a sequel, and that's too bad, because I think it's worthy of one, you know. And it's Dungeons and Dragons, which means the possibilities are like endless.
Yeah,
you know, of stories that you could come up with. So yeah, that was definitely one of my favorites, and it's one of those movies that like if I'm jumping around on streaming services or whatever and it's there and it's, I'm like, yeah, you know what? I could watch that again and I'll just do it, which is, dude, you're going to hate me, but it's like everything. Like there's 1,000 movies that are on my to watch list. And what do? I end up watching the same shit that I've watched 100 times already.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, the Shawshank Redemption is on there. Well, there we go.
Yep. No, I'm the same way. You know, these are our comfort movies. It's the same reason why when I go to, you know, the Texas Roadhouse, instead of getting something different, I always get the same dish. You know, this chicken dish with a lot of cheese on it. And every time I go, I think, well, I'm going to try something different this time, but I never do. You know, because it's something I know and it's something I love. And if it ain't broke, why fix it?
Exactly.
So, all right. My next one may come as a bit of a surprise because I don't know that we really talked about it a lot on the show, or if at all, but it's Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse.
We haven't talked about it yet because I haven't seen it yet. Saw the first one, but I haven't seen the second one yet. And
I absolutely loved the first one, and I don't love the second one as much as the first, simply because it ends on, well, the two negatives that I have for it is it ends on a cliffhanger, and the next installment, because it's a trilogy, the next installment isn't due out for another couple of years. Because these movies take time, because they're very complicated to make, apparently. And the second is, it's too fucking long. It's almost 2.5 hours, which for an animated movie is, it's too long. I'm just going to say it. You know, it's one thing to have a 2.5 hour movie or a 3 hour movie like Killers of the Flower Moon or something like that. But, you know, you're not constantly bombarded with sensory overload as you are, especially with, you know, the Spider-Verse movies where there's, you know, a billion things happening in every scene all at once. And you literally can watch these movies 2 or 3 times in a row and see something different every time. This one has Miles Morales as the main Spider-Man. And it's just, it's a lot of fun. If you saw the first one, it's more of the same, but on a more epic scale. And it really makes you look forward to the final movie in the trilogy.
All right. Add it to the list. List of movies I will probably never watch. Got it. Yeah. Okay.
Well, I really the first one.
I really have to get better at that, and I'm not kidding. A weird thing happens to me every night, and I don't know what it is. I have fallen into a routine. I watch Jeopardy, and then, because I've always watched Jeopardy for 20 years, I watched Jeopardy. And then I'm like, oh, look, another game show is on. I'll watch that. And I just fall down this stupid rut. I really got to get caught up on stuff that I should watch but haven't watched.
Yeah, you need to do that.
For sure. Yeah. Okay, man, what am I going to pick? Like, all right, I have to put this one on. Not because it was a big movie, not because it made a lot of money, but I just really, really, really enjoyed it. And it's Oppenheimer.
Yeah, yep.
I'm glad I saw it in IMAX. Not that I think you need to, but someone recommended and said, oh, you should see it in IMAX. And I did, and I'm glad. I'm glad that I did. And I saw Oppenheimer in IMAX on a Thursday night, a random Thursday night at like 8 o'clock, and the theater was packed. And that did my heart good to see that so many people went out to see like a history movie in a premium format on a weeknight, you know, and a 3 hour movie at that, you know, which my bladder was not terribly thrilled with.
Yeah.
But I wish they'd bring back intermission on long movies. That was a thing. Like my grandmother told me, like when she went to see the Ten Commandments in the theater, there was a legit intermission, you know, so people could go, you know, get food, snacks, go to the bathroom without missing any of the movie. I guess they don't want to do that because they want to squeeze in more showings, but man, I wish they would, especially like when you have a prostate that's like the size of a football. These things become important. But anyway, I thought the movie was fantastic. I thought all of the performances were great. Robert Downey Jr. was a revelation in this movie. One of the frequent critiques that I've heard is that the set, like the final third of the movie, is really about like what happened to Oppenheimer and, you know, him battling with Strauss and the political fallout and everything. And I'm like, but that's part of the story, you know? What were people expecting? The movie was going to end with dropping the atomic bomb on Japan. Like a lot of shit happened after that, you know, Truman's fallout with Oppenheimer and how, you know, he got disgraced at like all that shit happened, you know? So I didn't understand that as a criticism, you know? I really didn't, but yeah, if anyone who hasn't seen Oppenheimer, I mean, I'm a World War II nerd, you know, so I'm fascinated with anything to do with the war, specifically Oppenheimer. And man, it was good. Are there some little historical inaccuracies? Fuck yes, there fucking are. But it's a drama, not a documentary, you know? people forget that. Like, I just went to see Napoleon, and that's another complaint. And I'm like, I get it. It's a drama, though. So, Oppenheimer, yeah, definitely one of my top favorites for the last year.
Yeah, and we talked about this just a couple of weeks ago, because I just saw it last month, and I absolutely loved it. And in terms of historical accuracy, Oppenheimer is far closer to the truth than what Napoleon was.
Absolutely. 100%.
Gillian Murphy, or Cillian Murphy, I still never know how to pronounce his name.
Neither do I.
Was fantastic in that. And I've always liked him, you know, from the first time I saw him, which was in Peaky Blinders. He just, you know, whenever he's on the screen, he just fucking owns it. You know, you can't help but look at him. Even with Robert Downey Jr. on the screen at the same time. And as I, you know, as we talked about when I saw it a few weeks ago, I didn't even know that was Robert Downey Jr. I had to look up online to see who that actor was, because he was just fantastic. And then I saw it was Robert Downey Jr. I'm like, holy fuck. You know, I didn't recognize him. He really immersed himself in that role, which he does when he's on top of his game. He does what De Niro does and just becomes that person.
And oh, dude. Like, when I saw him in Chaplin, I was like, holy shit, he channeled fucking Charlie Chaplin.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking of, was Chaplin.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely fantastic movie. And it wasn't on my list only because I knew it was going to be on yours.
All right, what do you got next?
All right, what do I got next? What are we at? Our fifth one now, right?
Well, that was my fourth, yes. So
we're okay. So this is a toss-up. But it's a toss-up between Killers of the Flower Moon and Saltburn. But I'm going with Saltburn just because it's somewhat lesser known, and I'll be honest, I actually enjoyed it more than Killers of the Flower Moon. Much as I love Killers of the Flower Moon, it has some slow areas, and it really didn't have to be 3 hours. But Saltburn, I talked about it last week, because I had seen it just before we recorded. Absolutely enthralled with that movie. It harkens back in my mind to the early John Waters movies with his gross outs and, you know, collection of fucked up characters. And, you know, instead of Baltimore, though, it's at this, you know, giant estate in England. And it's unnerving. It's uncomfortable. It's gross. But it's something that has to be seen. And Barry Keoghan is in it, and another fantastic performance from him. If he's not nominated, I won't be too surprised, simply because the things he does in this movie, it would be like nominating Divine for Pink Flamingos in terms of things that he has to do in this movie. But it's just, you know, it's fantastic. And as I also said, it harkens back to his character in Killing of the Sacred Deer somewhat. But it's well worth watching. It makes you uncomfortable, makes your skin crawl. The somewhat surprise ending, or what should be a surprise ending, isn't really a surprise, because you know what's going to happen from the beginning. But that doesn't make the journey any less interesting.
Hmm.
And it's really well written, darkly funny, and beautifully shot. And if it didn't have the kind of content in it that it does, it would probably sweep the Oscars this year.
Interesting. All right. Well, That one keeps popping up, like on my Amazon Prime recommendations, like what we movies we think you will like. So I guess I should watch it.
Yeah, well, that's what you said last week when I talked about it.
That's true.
And every other movie I talk about well, you yeah. haven't seen.
Look, I did eventually watch, like, Stan and Ollie.
Yeah, a year later.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, listen, I don't like to rush into things, Scott, you know? okay, so I have a bunch more that I could go with, and I really, like, we could have done our top 10, and I would have been okay. But then I thought about it, and I really have to go because I've seen it twice now. I liked it so much, and that's Godzilla Minus One. It is, you know, it really is a good movie overall, specifically because it focuses on the human characters. Godzilla is just a thing that happens the same way a hurricane could happen, a tornado could happen, any destructive force of nature could happen. It just so happens that this is a giant monster, you know? But you know, just a quick plot outline. It's, you know, it goes back to the roots. It's the end of World War II. Japan is recovering from the war. They're starting to rebuild. And oh shit, a giant fucking monster, you know? But it's about like one little family and how they deal with the situation. You know, it's a guy who's a kamikaze pilot who doesn't go through with his mission. So now he's being shamed for that. And I don't want to give too much away. I mean, I'm not giving anything away that hasn't been like written about or in the trailer or whatever. And he meets a woman who is raising this little orphan girl and they form like this little family. And it's then, oh shit, here comes Godzilla, you know? And Godzilla is fucking scary in this one. It's no longer the goofy rubber suit Godzilla, which is great. Like, don't get me wrong. That's what we had back then, you know, and we loved it. It's a terrifying monster. It really is. And it's just a really well done movie. And it just proves that while like the American, like the Legendary Pictures Godzilla movies are okay, they're pretty good. Please leave this to the Japanese, you know, Toho Studios is just good at it, you know? Mm-hmm. So, and yeah, I highly, highly recommend it. Even if you're like, I would never in my life watch a Godzilla movie. You just have to trust the horror nerd, folks. You know, it's not really a Godzilla movie. It's a war movie. It's a human drama that just so happens to have a kaiju in it. So yeah, that's my fifth one.
All right. So do you have a worse one?
I do. So, or there were a couple of films that I hated, but then when I distilled it down, there's one just as a horror fan, I couldn't believe that there were people that said they liked this movie. And, you know, I told you I did some research into like what people think are the best movies of 2023. Well, yeah. I also did some research into what people thought were the worst movies of 2023. And this one is on most people's list. And that is Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey. This movie just made me fucking angry.
Wow.
Well, because, dude, like, I get it. The copyright expired and all these fucking hacks rushed to do a horror movie based on Winnie the Pooh, and that's fine, but pump the fucking brakes and put out a better movie. It wasn't even good as a slasher film, and it's ambiguous. Like, I think that it's supposed to actually be Winnie the Pooh and Piglet, and they're pissed that Christopher Robin left them, so they come back for revenge. But then it just looks like two dudes wearing stupid masks, like that they bought at the dollar store. So I'm like, if your premise is going to be that this is actually Winnie the Pooh and Piglet as characters, and it, but they're like on a murderous rampage, that would have been fucking cool. But no, it just looks like a big dude and a little dude in like overalls and cheap masks going around killing people with like sledgehammers. Even in the realm of generic slasher films, it was fucking bad. And my runner up is The Flash. I know you liked it. I despise that movie.
Yeah, that was almost on my list. The Flash.
Of the best movies?
My favorite movies.
Oh my God.
I mean, it Sirius was going to be on there. It was a contender for sure.
Okay. Fair enough.
Well, I like what I like, and I can't help that.
That's true.
All right. So my least favorite movie, I have a least favorite and most disappointing. My least favorite movie, and it didn't make me angry because it's actually one of the very few movies that I turned off 20 minutes into because it annoyed me so much. And it's Pet Sematary Bloodlines.
Mm.
And you and I talked about this, and we both feel the same way about it. It's a shitty movie. It didn't need to be made. And, you know, Stephen King needs to stop giving permission to every Tom, Dick, and Harry to use his characters and have some fucking dignity. It's not like he needs the money, you know, from selling the rights, you know, to his work. You know, he's not, certainly not out on a street corner, you know, with sunglasses on and a tin cup selling pencils.
Right.
So he, you know, Steve, I know you're listening. Stop selling your rights to everybody. Okay. You know, just stop doing it. Because Pet Sematary is such a great movie. The original, not the remake, the original. And it's probably the scariest book that King has ever written.
Yeah, you can make that argument.
And all movies like Pet Sematary Bloodlines does is just dilute that greatness. It really is just, it's fucking awful. But having heard, and I knew there was like a Winnie the Pooh horror movie out, but I had zero interest in seeing it, and I still have zero interest in seeing it. So I'm, you know, we'll never be able to compare notes on that because I just have no plans on watching it.
Dude, trust me. You know how I always say, don't take my word for it. Watch it for yourself. No. Take my word for it. Save yourself the pain and the misery.
Yeah.
And as far as Bloodlines, I agree with you. It's just, it committed two cardinal sins for me. One, it just made me feel apathetic. You know, even a movie like Blood and Honey, at least it made me feel something. Even if that something was hatred, it evoked a response. Bloodlines, I was just like, why am I watching this? You know, and it committed another sin. It used the song Bad Moon Rising by Creedence Clearwater Revival to kind of remind me that I'm watching a horror movie. You know, like whenever you hear that song, it's like, yes, we get it. It's a fucking horror movie. You know,
it just reminds me of An American Werewolf in London, where it was actually used very well.
Yes, but at least that movie was what, 30 years ago? 40 years ago, whatever, like a long time ago.
Well, now, and it made sense because it was about a fucking werewolf.
Right.
It made no sense in Pet Sematary.
Right. Now it's just used so generically, you know, to say, hey guys, remember you're watching a horror movie and bad things are going to happen.
Yeah.
You know? So. All right. Well, look, we're coming up on our time. So we finished just in time. On my favorites list, I just had like a couple of others. I really liked the Super Mario Brothers movie. I liked Evil Dead Rise. And I really, really liked Sisu. I thought that movie was excellent.
All right. Well, as I said, I did have The Flash on my short list, and I had Barbie on my short list too.
You know, that's another one I still haven't seen.
Yeah, I know. But real quickly, my most disappointing movie this year was Guardians of the Galaxy 3. And simply because of the plot line of, the raccoon. I can't remember his name now.
Rocket.
The entire sequence of him and his, flashbacks to when he was, being experimented on and all the other animals were being experimented on, I thought was just overkill. And it really, really dampened my enjoyment of the rest of the movie.
Mm.
And I almost want to watch it again, but I don't want to have to go through all of that, stuff where they're being experimented on. You know, so that was a disappointment because I wasn't expecting that and I didn't think it was necessary. I mean, James Gunn could have gotten the point across without going into trauma territory.
Yeah, I get it. It was a little much, and when I saw it in the theater, I was like, oh my God, all these kids in this theater right now are going to have nightmares tonight.
Yeah.
About baby raccoons. Like, holy shit.
I did.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it was rough. It definitely my favorites as far as Guardians movies go. It's in the order that they came out, right? 1, 2, yeah. 3. I think that's they. 2 was not bad. I think 1 was the best, and 3 was the least. My least favorite of the 3.
I'll agree with that.
So,
all right. So,
although real quick, did you see the Guardians of the Galaxy Christmas special when it was out?
No, I missed it.
That was good. That I thought was really good. It was very clever. And I really enjoyed it. I thought that was better than Guardians 3.
I will have to look for that somewhere.
Yeah, for sure.
I've heard good things about it. All right, so what have you got going on?
Getting back into the swing of things, started firing up, looking at some old scripts that I was working on. Return to the Theater of Terror is now available on Vudu and Amazon Prime. Soon to be on some other streaming platforms. So, yep, you can find Return to the Theater of Terror on Amazon Prime. And you still can go to theaterofterror.net if you want a physical copy on DVD. We only did one run of physical media, and I know there's people out there that are still into physical media, so get if you really want a copy, they are still available, so go ahead and get them.
I know it was going to be streaming soon. I just didn't know it was already streaming.
Yep. Well, yeah, I just found that out myself. Okay.
So. Well, I know what I'll be watching this weekend.
Nice.
Yeah. All right. So, in terms of Grindhouse Nights, which is really what I was going after, what's going on with that?
Oh, okay. Well, that
Jesus
kinda...
fucking Christ, Todd. Pay attention.
Well, that really just started up, so I didn't really even have that on the brain. But yep, submissions are open for the next Grindhouse Nights Film Festival. So if you have a creepy short film or feature film you'd like to submit, our early bird is running now, and it'll run to the middle of February. So I think it's only like $15 to submit. So just look us up on Film Freeway, Grindhouse Nights Film Fest, and submit your films. Our buddy Scott here is one of our judges again this year. We changed up some judges. We lost a few people, but brought on a whole bunch of new industry people. as judges. So we have a cool panel and got a bunch of submissions already. So I'm pretty psyched. And thanks for the reminder. It's not like it's my own film festival or anything.
Well, I kind of have an attachment to it, you know, even if it's just through you. Yeah, this is my third year judging the movies, and it's something I've come to look forward to. I really enjoy it. You know, are there some clunkers in there? Absolutely. But the good stuff far outweighs the bad. And, you know, it kind of gives me some hope that, you know, there are some excellent filmmakers out there and that you may have to search a little bit, but there's quality entertainment to be had in the, you know, as far as film goes. And, you know, Hollywood isn't the end all be all. Indie movies are as strong as ever, I think.
I couldn't agree more, man. I think there are good movies everywhere. You know, not everything that comes out of Hollywood is garbage. I mean, look, we just spent an hour talking about some good movies that we watched.
Yeah. You
know? But when people complain about Hollywood, I always tell them, well, then there's a vibrant indie scene out there. You just have to go look for it. Like go on Tubi, you know, Tubi TV.
Yeah.
There's a ton of indie stuff there. Go to a local film festival. They're everywhere. Like for like $20, you can spend all day or sometimes 2 days watching, watching awesome, awesome films. So
yeah,
go for it.
Absolutely. I started editing the Tree of Everlasting Sorrow yesterday, and I'm just going through correcting spelling errors, making notes on continuity errors, of which I know there are many. And I'm doing a chapter a day. Since this is a little bit on the shorter side, there's only 27 chapters in this one. I'm doing a chapter a day, makes it easier for me. And I'm hoping, you know, well, by the end of January, I'll send it off to my editor. And I'm using an editor this time because my editing sucks. Mm-hmm. And then once they're finished with it, you know, it'll be ready to hit the printing press. And I'm looking forward to people getting their hands on it. And Amazon now has the ability to make hardcover books. So I think this may be a hardcover and a paperback.
Oh, that'd be cool.
Yeah. And I'm trying to see how difficult it would be to make my previous books into hardcovers as well. So there is that on the horizon. And that's about it.
All right. Well, I look forward to it.
Yes.
And I do owe you your forward. I'm almost done with it. I should have that to you this weekend for sure.
Oh, good, 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 good. All right. And until next time, may all of your journeys be filled with pure imagination.